Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi and welcome to this week's edition of the Green Room Golf Course podcast. We're already 12 episodes into the show and it's amazing that there's been so much interest in it already. However, I'd really like to get the conversation going with our listeners and I'd love to hear your stories of life out on the course. So we've just launched a new Twitter handle called @GreenRoomBigger where I'd love to hear your feedback about each episode and I also hope to get some really great conversations going on there about the things you've heard. Before we get started, I'd like to tell you about a national campaign to promote sun safety that Bigger is supporting alongside Melanoma UK. Head to our website from the 8th of May for more information. Golfers and greenkeepers spend a lot of time outside and many take no measures at all to protect their skin. But if left unchecked, the consequences could be fatal, and so I'd encourage you to find out more. This week's episode is a double header, starting with a quick conversation I had with last year's winner of the Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year Award. Dan Ashelby is a greenkeeper at the Mere in Cheshire, having been nominated for the award while working at Wilmslow Golf Club. As part of his prize, Dan was invited to spend 8 weeks at the University of Massachusetts and its Winter Turf School, in addition to trips to the golf industry show and a Toro manufacturing facility. Dan told me all about it upon his return to the UK. Don't forget, nominations for Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year, both the senior and the young categories, are open until the end of May. So if you're a greenkeeping student or you know someone who is a talented greenkeeping student, make sure you get nominating. You never know where it may take you. Links to our website are in the show notes. Following that, I had a conversation with Simon Parfrey of Soil Biolab, who you may have met at Continue to Learn this year. Soil Biolab have been helping growers, farmers and greenkeepers improve plant health since 2014. The company takes a closer look at microorganisms within the soil and the impact bacteria, fungi or nematodes have upon soil. From nutrient cycling to disease suppression, a better understanding of soil on a microscopic level will help greenkeepers make the most of the resources available to them. Many thanks to Simon for taking the time to talk to me, but we kick off today's show with my conversation with Dan Ashelby, Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year 2018. When did you actually set off for, just remind me the date that you actually left?
I think it was the 7th of January.
7th of January. So just after Christmas, just everybody else is settling down. And you're
everyone's settling down, yeah. And I'm just 4 days into moving house and leaving my missus to unpack.
You just moved house?
Yeah, just after Christmas, just in between.
Oh, that is well played, well planned. So she was not too pleased.
She had a lot of work to do.
I bet. But you cleared off. Did you have any idea when you left what was in store for you?
No, not really. Not like what I expected.
No. What's it like when you get on a flight or you go to America and you're like, are they having me on here? Is this real? You know, is this actually happening?
Very much that feeling, yeah.
Yeah, what's it like when you get there?
It's just a different world. It's like being in a movie or something. It's a very surreal place to just wake up and all of a sudden have to realise you've got to spend two months living there.
It's a long time, isn't it, 2 months?
It certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a massive prize, the Toro thing. 2 months out there, and what's the weather like out there in January?
It was pretty damn cold wherever I seem to go. We're right in the middle of the polar vortex, so it was about minus 15 some days. And I kept watching the news. I was due to go to Minnesota at the end of the trip, and that was having temperatures of minus 50, wind chill at one point.
Minus 50, wow. How do you even pack for that? You don't need a suitcase, you just wear all your clothes, don't you, I suppose?
That's it laid off eventually, so it got down to minus 20, so it was quite cushy air.
Wow. And you're, I mean, presume you, I mean, the weather's like this. It's absolutely as cold as you've ever experienced and that sort of thing, but you've got to go to college every day. How did you find your experience of American, that American schooler's experience? Was it what they teach you on Saved by the Bell, or what was it like?
It's very scientifically based. It's a lot of soil management and fungicide management and whatnot.
Yeah. Was it very different to anything you'd come across before?
It's a lot more based around cultural practices, where they're still heavily involved in sort of chemical treatments, and they're just sort of opening their eyes to that side of it, really.
Okay, so. So you were learning things that you're thinking, we don't have the chemicals for this back home, or that
sort
of thing.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, they've got about 20 different chemical classes over there, and I think we've got five at the moment.
Yeah.
A lot of the things they're saying, we just treat it with this, and they think, nope, we've not got that.
No, we can't do that. So did you find yourself actually talking to them quite a bit of saying, well, we can't do that, this is what we have to do, perhaps teaching them?
Yeah, precisely, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking from, you're definitely encouraged to think for yourself and discuss things between the class, because they're all coming from different backgrounds. There's guys there from France and all over America, so massively different climates and different levels of clubs, so it was a good mix of different experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously the guy from France is even more extreme than us. They've got no products really at all, have they, there? So
very, very minimal products, and not including the language barrier, I suppose, as well on the course.
Yeah.
So they did very well.
You had that going for you, I suppose. You speak the same language. What did you... All right, so you couldn't... You know, the chemicals sort of thing is something that you can't really bring back here. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But what other things did you learn that perhaps are a bit more applicable, that are a bit more useful to you?
I think it's more being able to spend so much time on looking depth into subjects such as soil sciences and that. And there are things that I've touched on in my subjects that I've done here, but we've never really had time to go that in depth and learn it at such a critical level. And really get to the nitty-gritty of how we can manage the soils and the grasses and whatnot.
Okay, so you really understanding the science of it, right? Almost a microscopic level.
Physical level, almost physics level.
Okay, yeah. That's
very interesting.
It's interesting. How much did you sort of, like, engage with that sort of thing? Because that must be almost brand new, you know, that sort of level. Something. Did you enjoy it, or was it confusing, or was it hard?
It's a difficult theories to pick up on, but once you understand it, a lot of it. My old boss Steve, selected me.
Nominated, yeah.
Nominated me for the role. He always spoke about similar things about cation exchange and stuff, and it's stuff that I picked up on but never really had an overly good grasp on, and it was things like that that really, really come clear from taking the course.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And the education side of things, was that 8 weeks long, was it, something like that?
It was
six weeks.
Yeah, during my fifth week I had the break to go off to San Diego for the GAS show.
That's right, yeah. It's a long way, isn't it, from, from Massachusetts.
I've certainly got a few air miles.
Yeah, it's almost as far again, isn't it?
I think it was about a six-hour flight over America.
Wow, that's massive. And what's the golf industry show like? How did you find that experience?
Oh, that was a very good experience. It was similar to Harrogate, just on the usual American massive scale.
Yeah.
Some really great new things coming out of there, some new machinery, and it was just a great week in general. A lot of the the British guys were over, so it was sort of the British invasion for the week, and they got to catch up with those guys.
Yeah. What are some of the products that we should be on the lookout for over the next few years?
I don't want to speak with a vested interest almost, but I was really impressed. Toro's got a prototype machine coming out of like a diesel hybrid.
Yeah.
Greens mower that looks very interesting. It just looks a very sort of dinky, lightweight machine, but it looks like it could be a real step forward in the future.
Oh, cool. Something to look forward to. That's cool. And you've mentioned Tara and that sort of thing. Did they look after you throughout the that entire experience? Because you're a long time away from home.
They've done more than I could ever ask for. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
I really appreciate what Tara's done for me. It's made it a real once in a lifetime experience.
Oh, perfect.
Like I say, the accommodation they set for me, and they were so helpful and set my flights, and it just made it really, really accessible and really easy to enjoy the whole experience.
Good man. And did you get to their factory, the Toro factory?
I did, yeah.
Yeah? What's it like?
That was in the final week after we all graduated, and I could go to Minneapolis then to have a look around their headquarters. So it was a nice, a bit more relaxed pace, not having to worry about school work and getting all that done. So yeah. It was a really nice end to the whole experience. That.
Yeah, you're a greenkeeping student of the year, you're used to exams and that sort of thing. What was the exam process like in America? Was that tough, or did you find it easy?
It was achievable, but it was definitely something you've got to be working at.
Yeah.
You can't just fluke through on the test. All the teachers sort of test in their own way. Some like doing written exams and essays, where others do tests on a every time you see them, and others do project work.
Yeah.
So you sort of test it over your full range of abilities in every different way, and like I say, you've got to really put the effort in if you want to get something out of it. And yeah, I did quite well out of it. I think I got high honours in every class, so...
Oh, good man, wow. Justifying that tag as student of the year, then.
Yeah, precisely, yeah. I think I had a bit of an expectation on my shoulders coming over there with that in mind, yeah.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. You've given yourself a reputation that you have to live up to. So well done for that. What you were there 8 weeks, January through to March, I suppose. What was your... favourite part? What was your favourite part of the entire trip?
I really enjoyed getting to the golf industry show. It was nice to see the sun again. I've forgotten what that looked like. And two, getting to meet up with the other guys from Britain. There was some real big names, so to speak, within the industry, and to sort of meet them on a personal level and catch back up with Steve, my mentor, and just have a whole week at quite a relaxed pace, just talking a bit of British greenkeeping again. And
brilliant. Yeah, of course, I forgot that the mentor gets to, your nominee gets to come out, don't they, on the trip? So he must have been chuffed with you.
Yeah, when I give Steve the call on the night, I don't think he could believe it
though. Well done for that sort of thing. And since you've been back a couple of weeks now, have you noticed a change in yourself after the experience? Do you consider yourself to have been changed by the whole thing?
I do feel very, very confident in my abilities. Speaking a lot more with my current boss, and that, and sort of just the way I'm viewing the course and why we do things and how we do things, I think it really changed. And the advice I can give to the other staff, I think it's really valuable to pass on that education.
Yeah, you've gained a real insight into why you're doing things out on the course and why you're doing certain processes and that sort of thing. It's almost the next step, isn't it? It's not just doing a task, but actually understanding why.
Precisely. The Americans take that course, they can commit to full-time education, so it's essentially a two-year exam for them that's pushed into 2 weeks. Wow. And it's for the guys who want to take that next step towards management, and there are some real concepts in that you sort of have to get a grasp of to produce good playing surfaces.
Yeah, good man. And just one last thing, what would you say to... we've opened applications for the 2019 competition. What would you say to somebody who's thinking of applying to take part?
I'd say, just put yourself forward and you've got to have confidence in yourself. If you're doing something different, if you've got an invested interest in the job, then that's half of it. And then it's just personality and, show your ambition to learn and progress.
Okay, I'm going to leave that there. Thanks a lot to Sudan for taking the time to chat to me. And don't forget, if you've been inspired to take part in the Torres Student Green Cube of the Year Awards, head to the bigger website to get involved. There are links in the show notes. Next up is a science lesson from Simon Parfrey of Soil Biolab. Simon's opinion that one of the most vital pieces of equipment available to course managers today is a microscope. By taking a microscopic look at your turf, you can discover just how healthy it actually is. Scientific greenkeeping is relatively new, but the things you may see may also change the way you manage your course forever. Could you tell me a little bit about Soil Biolab?
Yeah, of course again. So we're 5 years old this year. We're completely independent. We set it up as a bunch of enthusiasts that were already from the soil sector or from a horticultural background. Yeah, we look at different types of soils in different types of contexts. So agriculture, horticulture, mm-hmm. Fine turf and amenity, and arboriculture. We measure bacteria, fungi, protozoa, nematodes. We produce kind of test reports against guidelines and advise people on whether that's good, bad, where improvements might be able to be made.
So you're advisory would it be fair to say that greenkeepers course or something could come to you for that sort of advice? You work on a cost-by-cost basis?
Yeah, we do. We don't sell products. That's kind of why we're independent. And actually, we probably don't sell enough of our kind of advisory service. Because it's a new subject for most people, soil microbiology, we do a lot of interpretation, which we kind of give clients for free. We want them to remain engaged and gain the maximum understanding of the test reports that we produced and kind of use that to make some changes to what they're doing, which I think by virtue of people coming to us in the first place indicates that they want to make some kind of change to what they're already doing. Over 5 years we've grown considerably. Our biggest sector is probably agriculture now, whereas 5 years ago it was horticulture. We deal with a number of different organisations, not least been kind of supporting Bigger here for the last 3 years and being involved, which is great, but the likes of the Soil Association, big farming groups in places like Ireland, and we're taking samples from clients across Europe.
Can I start with a really obvious question then? What is in a soil sense, in a turf sense, what is a microorganism?
They're all if you like, they're the living, it's the life within the soil. Mm-hmm. So we start with single-celled microorganism like a bacteria, probably one of the most simplest, one of the ones people are most familiar with, and fungi, which is multicellular microorganism, but basically tiny microscopic life forms that exist within the soil. And I think the importance of them, they're often overlooked because they're so small, we can't see them, we mm-hmm. tend to ignore them, but actually what they lack in size they make up for in numbers, certainly in a healthy, kind of correctly functioning soil. Lots of them can actually make pretty significant impacts to the soils. And some of the key benefits to where they're present and working well they help with nutrient cycling. So whether you run high levels of organic matter in your greens mm-hmm. or not, and organic matter might represent different things to different people, not least in a fine turf environment. People think of thatch quite often. From a soil perspective, we're talking about sources of carbon within the soil. So they convert that soil organic matter, those carbon sources, into nutrients which are available to grasses. Uh-huh. So that's kind of one benefit, helping cycle things in the soil. The other is disease suppression, which is probably one of the areas I think that a greenkeeper might benefit from looking at and managing the soil microbiology the best. We know from tests we've done, from kind of research that we've undertaken with others, and cross-sector work, that the more active a soil is, so the more bacteria and fungi, protozoa and nematodes that are present, alive, working away,
yeah.
the least likely you are to have diseases in your soil environment. And that's basically because pathogenic organisms are kept in check. They're outnumbered, they're kind of limited in terms of what they can do, which is really important for any monoculture, not least fine turf, where you know, as a plant, grasses are being subject to really high stresses, whether it's cutting every day to within a whisker of its kind of life, whether it's through kind of applications of all the nutrition that it needs to grow in a sandy kind of soil. But it's a very stressful environment, and actually it's quite conducive to pathogenic organisms. So the more beneficial microorganisms you can kind of harbour in that soil, the better.
Okay, so what are ways that you can encourage microorganisms, or what are ways perhaps that in the past they've been, because we didn't understand them, because greenkeepers didn't understand them, that they've been almost eradicated or neglected?
There's a couple of things actually which greenkeepers, in terms of soil managers, do really well, which perhaps other types of growers might not. Mm-hmm. And that's aeration. Really, really important for microorganisms to function and multiply, and regulate or manage water. Okay. And it's fairly unique from
as
a soil management.
As that.
Yeah, it's fairly unique from a soil management perspective, in so much as the physical aspect of the soil is managed well mm-hmm. compared to a farmer who's driving in and out of a field. Soil gets compacted. They have no means to water a field. They've got what they've got.
Yeah.
So the management of the physical aspect is really, really great, but where it starts to fall flat, things that could be done better, is application of organic matter, which is really hard when you're running kind of audited or regulated playing surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that the term organic matter might scare some people. They think of thatch, which is bad, compared to what we're talking about, soil organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important to feed and maintain the interaction of those microorganisms. So some form of long-term carbon source in the soil zone is important. And then the other thing I would kind of say is about fertilizer regime. High levels of applied nutrition aren't necessarily good. They can limit or inhibit or kill off certain groups of microorganisms. So it's kind of, you end up in a, it's quite a complex scenario to break that circle.
Absolutely.
If you're already applying kind of nutrition, how do you suddenly stop applying that to let your microorganisms kind of monitor? And which really, that's kind of where we come in. The first step of that process is to get a baseline as to mm-hmm. where things are at, so that you can kind of plan a strategy from it. But that'd be the kind of key things.
What happens then if you do, if you're saying perhaps applications of fertilizer aren't that good, if you what is the first step to stop? Do you wean yourself off the fertilizer?
I think across kind of all the different types of clients I see, I think that weaning off mm-hmm. is probably the correct way. The certain things need to be in place, so you need to ultimately end up with a balanced soil, microbially, physically, chemically, and you can't do all of those things all at once. So it's a gradual process.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be data-led as well, not just soil testing, but you can do your own tests on green, whether it's monitoring moisture content, things like that. Mm-hmm. And over time, you build up that kind of data repository that will inform a point in time where you make a decision to break that loop. Yeah. So I think it's as much, it's about preparation, gradually weaning under some controlled system, mm-hmm. being led by data, until you're at a point, and it will be different for different people, you are confident that you can start switching things off. But I think that's very much down to the experience, knowledge and expertise of the individual greenkeeper to make that call, because different environments respond differently to things.
Yeah. How are you, the data sort of driven greenkeeping almost is very different to the sort of intuition that we've had in the past, which is almost outdated now. But how are you finding greenkeepers? Are they embracing that change? Or is it something that you sort of have to...
Do you know, I think when we first started, we were a lot more trying to kind of guide people to that way of working. Mm-hmm. But actually what we're finding is more and more people, a big mindset shift is happening everywhere in growing.
Yeah.
And they are already already kind of halfway there themselves with that mm-hmm. change. So out of all the different types of growers that we deal with, I'd probably liken, generally speaking, the greenkeepers that we deal with are up there with some of the top kind of horticultural growers, you know, big kind of grass greenhouse growers, in terms of technical ability to manage different things all at the same time and see how that jigsaw kind of fits together.
Yeah.
It's just, for many of them, microbiology is kind of another part of that jigsaw, and quite a large part that they need help initially to get their head around. That's why a session like this is a great eye-opener, and they can take a skill back with them back to their business mm-hmm. that they can either use themselves or show other people to kind of...
Do you provide them with the information to sell this to the golfers, you know, the club committee? Because like you say, it's not something you can see. It's something obvious.
We, not directly, we have supported and done a number of presentations for people which have then kind of gone on to inform board level decisions. But I think the biggest kind of benefit is in selling the positive effects of what managing soil life can bring, so reduction of inputs. And I think that phase reduction, showing that as you start doing one new thing kind of different, another thing that you've been doing historically, you can start to reduce. The cost saving ultimately is probably the best.
Is the ideal situation, from you looking at it purely as a scientist point of view, for there to be nothing applied onto the soil, for the soil to do its own thing? Is that the perfect?
Yes. Uh-huh. However, the context is really, really important.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, when I first kind of got into this type of soil management from horticulture, kind of 7-8 years ago, it was very much an organic kind of focus and approach, which is great for the organic community. And I think that everybody applying kind of artificial fertilizers would probably agree with organic guys that we would rather not. We'd rather spend as little as possible mm-hmm. on our inputs. But context is really important, and we're working with different types of environments. So whether you're a farmer, the field you've got. You mm-hmm. can't change the formation, the bedrock. So there's certain limitations. Similarly, with high quality sports surface, especially that complies with certain standards for playing, there are a set of limitations in place with things that you can do to fundamentally change the structure of that soil. It's 98-99% sand, which generally speaking isn't great for life, isn't great for long-term retention of things.
Yeah.
So you can only adapt, amend, change that so far before it ceases to be compliant with the standards which hold it up there.
Absolutely.
And could dictate how it responds, how it plays, which is really important. So the experience people have with the, you know, mm-hmm. the golfers is really, really important. And ultimately, you know, could argue it's the ultimate measure, isn't it? If you have a golf club and every member is over the moon, you're doing something right. So actually, any change that you introduce could jeopardise that. So yeah. I kind of tend to look at this now, because of all those limitations, it's about mitigating risk or likelihood of those things going wrong. And yeah. in reducing those likelihoods, those kind of magnitudes of risks, can you increase positive effects in other areas? So to kind of answer the question, in a natural scenario, yes, but these are fairly unnatural environments, mm-hmm. man-made, created, and mm-hmm. have to conform. That makes it really, really difficult. It's not impossible. And I think during our time, we've probably come across one, at least one golf club that has been organic. Uh-huh. But I think the key is reduction in what you're applying, because those, whether it's nutrition or pesticides, they do set back, inhibit
yeah.
the natural yeah. life that will exist.
Is a microscope then a tool that a course manager should have in his office?
Do you know what? I think given the benefits, not just from a soil perspective, but from a plant pathogen perspective, given the numbers of kind of turf diseases,
yeah,
absolutely a perfect piece of kit to kind of add to the bench, yeah. really.
Which is something that you just wouldn't think of, you know?
No.
It's certainly new. Yeah,
I think it is, and it's actually really accessible. You know, it's not too hard to use and set things up to mm-hmm. kind of start to perform your own basic analyses. The key with it all is maintaining that skill. So once you've kind of started, keep practicing using the microscope. Try and use it on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, but yeah. continue to use it, or else you kind of do tend to lose that skill set.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Where's a good place to start if you are brand new to all this?
Really good question. For most, it's touched on in agronomic kind of, in an agronomic sense, it forms a very, very brief part of most people's training. Mm-hmm. It's small, but as we're seeing later down the line, it becomes a bigger and bigger focus. So where's a good place to start? Well, I would probably, there's a few guys that exist kind of within the industry, including some of the products guys that have been kind of unfortunate, I suppose, having to educate their consumers, which presents its own issues yeah. in a way. But there's a number of good kind of websites and resources for understanding it. I think probably one of the best single pieces of information to just start getting your head around soil microbiology is a booklet which you can get for free off of the USDA website, so from America, and it's called the Soil Biology Primer.
Okay.
It goes through the individual microorganisms, the key species and their mm-hmm. function, which is really important as well. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I guess, leaves you with a sense of this is important, I need to kind of understand it more. Otherwise, the next best thing, which we spend a lot of time, I'm spending an increasing amount of time just speaking to people, mm-hmm. and that's on the telephone. You know, I almost invariably, it will take half an hour to three quarters of an hour. Someone will call us up out of the blue, paint a picture of their particular situation, mm-hmm. and we'll kind of talk about what we do, how this kind of fits in, what sort of things they might consider, and they can go away, mull it, digest it, and contact us again if they want any more help. But, we'll just kind of fire us an email. Certainly people are kind of getting more, the level of interest is kind of going up and up and up.
I need to ask you a couple of things that you might just be able to shed a bit of light on for me, as well yeah. as for the guests. Nematodes, yeah. you mentioned them.
Yeah.
Are they a good thing or are they a bad thing? I've heard arguments on both sides.
Yeah, okay. So we kind of sit on the fence because it's all about balance within the microbial community. And for most people, they will have already come across them from a negative perspective. So that's kind of the root feeding plant pathogenic type. Mm. Certainly in other kind of grass situations, kind of stadium football ground scenarios, conditions, shade, damp, so corner flag spots are notorious for harbouring high levels of pathogenic types. Now, we look at four key types of nematodes in terms of the analysis that we do: bacterial feeders, fungal feeders, predatory, which eat each other, and protozoa, and then the plant pathogen type. Mm-hmm. And it is okay to have plant pathogen types in existence in your soil as long as you have high or higher levels and balance levels of the other feeder types, because they keep it, look a bit like the pathogen analogy, keep things in check. So
it's literally a balanced ecosystem.
It's a balanced ecosystem. Yeah. And it's, you can kind of compare it to, say, the Serengeti, you know, where if you removed all the lions, the antelope numbers would go through the roof, which would mean that the antelope would feed more on grasses, which would have bare patches, and then it affects it's that kind of, it works at that kind of level. Now, if you have issues with nematodes, there's obviously some imbalance within that system. There's some kind of imbalance within that system, but it's another kind of analogy which I'd like to tell people. It's a little bit like compared to human health, we could test individuals, you or I, for the flu virus. Mm-hmm. And we might well find it, but we don't have the flu.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's there, it's present, but it's held in check by other... In fact, you know, the pathogens are around us all the time. It takes for a change in particular conditions, you know, the environment or a vector, in order for them to kind of suddenly come to the forefront. And that's, if you can kind of understand that relationship at a kind of greenkeeping level, you can kind of think about how all the different things that you do might change either the conditions, the environment, or create a vector for a pathogen to kind of multiply, such as bad hygiene practices when you're cutting grasses.
Right.
Such as when you cut grasses and leave a plant open to infection at a key time when ambient conditions are conducive to fungal pathogens, for instance. Mm. It's all about balance.
That's interesting. Could you tell me about compost tea and how that can help in this situation?
So, interesting, because compost tea is a really contentious point. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of work with different people on compost tea, and one of the biggest issues is the definition of compost tea, and not just what it is, but how it's produced, because it means that with a lack of a standard, which is something we're trying to produce, working with others to produce a standard for compost tea. So when we talk about compost tea, does it work or doesn't it? We're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's based on people's experiences. They produce it in all kinds of different ways, using different feedstocks, different additives. We're comparing apples with pears and saying, does it work or doesn't it? But all that aside, the principles behind it are boosting soil microbiology. Mm-hmm. So you're adding high concentrations of predominantly bacteria and fungi, maybe protozoa and different types of nematodes as well, but predominantly high concentrations of bacteria and fungi, and kind of in an active format, so alive, kind of working, so that they can start kind of beavering away in the soil, interacting, kind of fitting in that nutrient cycling and disease suppression. So that's kind of the primary way in which it works. I think most of the literature or peer-reviewed literature where there have been positive findings have tend to focus on disease suppression. Mm-hmm. And certainly we've seen firsthand through different studies that if you apply it as a foliar application, changes can be quite rapid. It's not just within the plant, but within the soil as well.
Yeah.
But we've seen, for instance, in oak trees, significant reduction in instances of mildews where compost tea has been applied from early in the season. So it could be, if it's produced to a great quality and applied from the right times within the season, it can be a great way of building up some resilience and helping to try and mitigate certain risks. Also, if you're applying other things to the soil, for instance, you know, chemicals that will kill off some of your natural soil life, it can be a great thing to try and help re-establish. So it's a potentially a good thing in people's toolbox to kind of pull out and kind of help restore soil life, build it, maybe orientate it to a more appropriate balance as well, and build diversity.
But you're working to sort of get a standard definition of compost here at the moment.
Standard definition and production method. We did a piece of work beginning of 2017 looking at different ways of producing different additives that could be included, which we did kind of completely independently to inform a large trial in kind of a agricultural cereal crop scenario. That was really, really useful. We produced kind of a white paper which people can kind of get from us, but the key thing is it's, you know, we took the characteristics of the starting compost and magnify them. And I think that's one of the most important things for people to kind of realise is the biggest factor, two biggest factors actually, the quality of the compost that you use at the start, as well as the water quality, which can ultimately shape what you end up producing. So yeah, it's an ongoing piece of work trying to kind of standardise it. And once we've kind of done that, I think we'll have a better kind of evidence base in which to begin comparisons.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.